The views and opinions expressed by the host or guests of Theology Mixer Radio are the views and opinions of the speakers themselves and are not representative of TheologyMix.com or the collection of its many contributing authors.
It's time to mix it up, folks, with the Theology Mixer Radio Show. We're going to toss ministry topics into the blender, puree some great guests and controversy, all for the glory of God. So grab your Bible, defend your thoughts, and enjoy the Theology Mixer Radio Show.
McCauzy, and I welcome you to the Theology Mixer. In the mixer today, we're going to talk about something very exciting, something that has lots of implications on our future, which is who we're going to elect as the next president of the United States. And it's a tough call. There's no clear-cut person, really, that we can take a look at in regards to a Christian perspective. So we're going to try and talk about what kind of perspective we're supposed to take. Who do we vote for? Do we vote our conscience? Is a third-party vote a vote for Hillary Clinton? Lots of things to throw out here today. And, Jeremy, we've got a lot to chat about, and I know because you talk theolitics, you talk all kinds of things, this is something close to your heart, and I know you're excited to share about it. Welcome in, my friend.
Yeah, thanks, Scott, and I am definitely excited, first of all, to be back with you. It's been a long time since we got together, and this is one of the things we were hoping to do. It has been too long, and I'm excited to talk about the conversation. It seems like it's been about two and a half months since we got together, and a ton has changed when we just sort of lobbed the idea out there to do a show like this. And, I mean, even in the past week, we've seen just an uproar of questions about morality and ethics, which we'll probably get into a little bit. And I'm excited also, not just for the topic and to be with you, but also to have our two guests. I want to welcome in Matt Whitman, who is the worst Christian ever. Matt, welcome to the show.
I love the way that sounds. It's really working. Thank you. It's good to be here, guys.
And then I'm also glad to bring in Elijah Thompson, the host of the Fetal Position podcast. And both of these guys are libertarian leaning. And Elijah, thanks for being on the show. We appreciate you.
My pleasure.
And what we want to do today, guys, and I'm going to try to give you a little bit of a heads up and I'll give you some order here, is we want to talk about the candidates. We're going to get into the third party candidate, at least the strongest one. And we're going to talk about libertarian candidate Gary Johnson. But before we do that, I'd like each of you to give your thoughts on the two major candidates that are out there in front of us. We've all had plenty to the news media has been spoon feeding us nonsense for the last two and a half months. We've got Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And Matt, I'll start with you. What are your thoughts on our two major candidates? You just released the video today. Was that a literal comparison or?
Yeah, you're talking about my video that likens our voting options to herpes and chlamydia. That's right. There's some context to that. I'll go with dumpster fire. I'm a history guy. I can't, for the life of me, come up with a worse set of options in the history of the American pseudo-democracy. I think it speaks ill of our society, and I think it's drawn on out a lot of sad things from otherwise good, honest people as we try to clumsily find a way to locate ourselves on this election map.
Yeah, and as we look at the Christian options, I mean, it just seems like not only do we have the worst political options we've seen, I would say ever, but I'm only like 33, 34 years old, so it's like, I guess I can't say that, but it just seems like for Christians to make this call, we really have zero options. And Elijah, what are your thoughts on the two major candidates?
I think I'm going to go ahead and just dive in, and I'm on board with what you guys were already saying, is that I think that this combination of the two major candidates has got to be – I think there was a meme that I saw once that said there's got to be a cheaper way to find the two worst people in society. And it's amazing to me that we have these two people who are supposed to be what would otherwise be considered like the upper echelon of human beings, one of these two people is going to lead one of the greatest countries in the world. And this is our option. Like, I just don't understand how we got here, but like you, I am Like you, Jeremy, I am relatively young. I'm 29. I just turned 29. So this is kind of – this isn't the first election I've been paying super close attention to, but it's definitely one of the first. The first one I think was last time. And it was – I thought last time was bad. And I was like, oh, man, that, you know, there's – they're kind of crappy on both sides, but I'm like, please, can we have that choice again?
Yeah. Elijah, I think you're right on board in regards to your sentiments on who do we vote for, because the options are so awful. And the last two elections, which we had to stomach ourselves through, I think I was a write-in vote for Alan Keyes both times because that guy has a Christian heart. So that lends itself to the topic, how on earth does a Christian vote for two people that their morals are absolutely not Christian? And these are the two major parties that typically always get voted in. So that lends itself to the topic. You know, we're talking a little bit about libertarians. Jeremy and I talked the last time we were on the show about libertarian candidates. At the time, Austin Peterson was running against Gary Johnson to see who was going to be that person for the libertarians. I'm sadly disappointed in the option with Gary Johnson. His debate skills are less than adequate. But there's the Constitution Party with Castle. Maybe guys talk about the third option because there's always another option. It's not always Democrat and Republican, but many people say, you know what, if you vote third party, you're voting for Hillary Clinton. Matt, thoughts on that?
That line of reasoning boils my blood. I'm a Christian, and so like the part of the Bible where it says things like, knowingly do evil so that hypothetical possible good might happen later eludes me. The thing we should do is just vote for something we think is good. And you know what? If you think Donald Trump is good, vote for it and say, I think this is good, and just own it. But trying to guilt me with these two awful options, with this I'm somehow doing evil, no. I'm the one who's not voting for evil. I'm the one who's racking my brain trying to figure out how to vote grace and how to vote peace, and how to vote for something better. The whole point is that the longer we keep voting for evil, the more those who make evil will feel like what they do is completely acceptable and give us more and more evil options until we get the 2016 election. So that line, oh my goodness, I've heard it so many times. It doesn't work for me anymore. The disappointing thing is the third-party options are incredibly weak. How I wish Gary Johnson was a good candidate, but he's not. He's I'm sure a decent fellow, but he thinks that libertarianism is halfway between conservatism and liberalism. I think that libertarianism is a rejection of the political spectrum. I think it's us saying, I renounce my right to control people where no victim is involved. And the whole game of politics is to try to get 51% of people to empower you and your tribe to control other people and take their stuff. Well, I think that's wrong. I think that's evil. So when I say libertarian, I don't mean capital L libertarian party. I mean lower L libertarian, like political grace, like grace of Jesus played out in the process of voting.
Amen. Great way to put it. Where do you stand, Elijah, in regards to this topic of voting in a third-party candidate? Is it a wasted vote? Is it a vote that we need to embrace?
At this point, I agree with what everyone else has said. That's pretty much how it's going to be, I think, the whole show, well, at least for this topic. The way that I'm looking at it is a lot of people are kind of trying to figure out which third-party candidate to vote for. I know some people who don't want they don't want Hillary Clinton and they don't want Donald Trump, but they lean more Democrat, and they're like, well, should I vote for Jill Stein? I wish she wasn't crazy. And then the people who are a little more conservative are like, well, I want to vote for Johnson, but he's a social justice warrior, so he's out of control. Then there's also Daryl Castle, but some people on the left wing are like, well, Daryl Castle wants to institute some kind of like Christian theocracy. And then there's that random McMullen guy that no one knows anything about, but he'll end up getting a couple thousand votes just because he's not anybody else. And so at this point, it's frustrating because the only thing that people are looking for is something else. And like everyone in the Libertarian Party currently thinks that if we had someone who could at least communicate the message of libertarianism, we would get a ton of votes. We wouldn't win. I highly doubt that we would win, but at least it would be something that would represent a movement in that direction, or at least a movement away from the two major parties. So when people are talking to me about who they should vote for, I honestly just say, you know what? It does not matter. If you do not want Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, vote for anybody else. And it will be a vote against the two-party system. It will be a vote against Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump. And it, because the person won't win, just vote. Vote for somebody else. If in the rent, like let's say in 2020, we have 16 parties that are viable because this election has destroyed everything. If we're at a point where we have the actual real option of saying, well, Daryl Castle might win or Gary Johnson might win, then we can talk about the specifics. But at this point, just vote against the two-party system. Just vote against these idiots that are supposed to be the two major party candidates. And that's, I mean, like I said, just vote against them, and I'm okay. We're gonna be friends.
Well, to me, I mean, I totally agree with that remark. But what that exposes is that this election isn't what elections normally about are normally about, which is where we try to inquire to find who might be the best person to lead us. Instead, right. I feel like this is an election that just exposes how broken everything has suddenly become. And I mean, this has happened quickly. But there are two things that I think are getting exposed here. One is the American democracy. This isn't working. This seemed like a good idea once. And the way we wrote up the rules originally, I think are really smart and work. But something broke. And I have my theories on that for another time. So I feel like that is under tremendous strain at this point. And the other thing is just evangelicalism. I mean, Christians messing around in politics. It makes it look to the rest of the world like maybe we are just another special interest group who say stuff about like Jesus and Bible and stuff because it works to get us power. And I think both of those old institutions are looking pretty rough and are going to be two of the big casualties of the fallout of this whole thing.
Yeah, I think you both are right about that. We're going to turn a corner here and talk specifically about some issues related to Gary Johnson. But what you guys are describing is it's 100% accurate. And I'm kind of glad in a weird way, the way this is going, kind of as Elijah was talking, just felt myself saying amen. It's sort of like we're getting what we deserve. And another thing we won't spend a whole lot of time talking about, but it's this whole idea of viability. You just vote for the one who can win. And I'm sort of pleased to see that failing so miserably, not only in the two major parties, but I feel like the same thing happened with the Libertarians. I feel like they voted in Gary Johnson and Bill Weld just because they had a chance. And again, something that I've been saying for a long time on my podcast is vote your conscience. Don't vote for viability. Anyone can win if you vote for them. And one of my concerns with – we've seen the scandals that's come out with Donald Trump this past week and a half. We don't have to get into details, but I'm concerned that there's a lot of Christians who are going to go, I can't vote for these two guys anymore, and I still feel a duty to vote. Maybe I'll just vote for Gary Johnson without actually thinking about it. And I wanted to talk about two issues that are very important to Christians on this issue and where Gary Johnson falls on it. And Elijah, I'm going to come to you first on this because you have the Fetal Position podcast. Talk a little bit about where Johnson stands on the abortion issue and whether or not you have any concerns with him on that.
I do generally. So libertarianism as sort of a rule, we tend to want the government to get out of stuff. When Roe versus Wade was passed, that was essentially an antithetical of libertarian perspective because that gave the federal government the permission to talk about and enforce certain rules when it comes to abortion. Gary Johnson has said that he is personally pro-choice, but the way that he is approaching the abortion issue is that he wants to return it to the states. He wants to give sort of like how murder isn't handled at the federal level, abortion would be the same thing. He, in his personal experience being in political office, he has passed laws or signed bills. I forget the details of what exactly he did, but he was in support of a woman's, what he called a woman's right to choose, up until the point of viability, which is almost, I don't want to say opposite, but it's much, actually much better than his running mate, Bill Weld, who has basically said that he is okay with abortion from conception all the way until birth, because he, using the political libertarian speak, wants to keep the government out of it. But I'm like, that's not keeping the government out of it. That's basically making the government as involved as possible until, yep, you know, as long as it's a pro-choice perspective. So Gary Johnson's basic overall thing is that he wants to return it to the states, and he wants to make it so that, and unfortunately, he did not say that he will defund Planned Parenthood. So he is pro-choice, generally speaking, but removing it, basically repealing Roe versus Wade and moving it to the states to make that decision, I think, is a step in the right direction, even if he personally would disagree with like where a pro-life stance on it.
Now, I'm going to come to you, Matt, and hopefully you're ready for this one. One of the arguments that I've heard on the pro-life issue, why we should vote for Trump, is because he'll vote in Supreme Court justices that are pro-life. And there are some people who are extremely passionate about this, to the point where it's like, even the comments this past week, they're saying, well, still, you know, life is more important than that. And I get that argument. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think one of these two candidates is better if we're just talking about the pro-life issue?
No, I don't. First of all, I just reject the whole premise. How long have we been waiting around for the government to act in the interest of innocence? Like, forever. How long have people got our votes by saying, well, I care about those babies? The only time they care is like the 6 months leading up to elections. And just that we don't get that that's the game yet speaks ill of our ability to pay attention. And so, you know, we've had 40 years of these kind of promises. Who's done anything again? How does that work? I think it's an overblown promise. Like, what is it that we really want? Do we want abortion to be illegal, or do we want there to be less of it and for it to go away? And sometimes I feel like we take our eye off the ball and we're more concerned about just finally getting the government to admit that we were right, because the government is, of course, the source of all truth and knowledge. And if they finally say we were right, then we win. So we need those 9 people in robes to side with us. And the only way we're going to get that, deal with Donald Trump? Well, come on. It's like making a deal with – well, I won't complete the sentence, but it's not a deal we should make, and it's not one he's going to deliver on. The next thing I'd say to that is, like, when did he become against abortion again? Like, was that a year ago? Was that when he read 2 Corinthians? Like, when did that happen? Because that's a very recent innovation for him. And his behavior doesn't in any way smack of someone who would follow through on a promise. He makes deals and bargains to get things, but there's no reason we have no leverage once he's elected. So we know how he makes deals. Why would he follow through on that deal to appoint, you know, the kind of Supreme Court justices that theoretically we think we want? And the biggest picture in all of this for me is, I think evangelicals right now have this idea that we go to the government and pull from the moral scraps from their table, that they're the ultimate arbiters of what is truth and what is right, and that the best way to fix things is to go through them for their permission for things to be better. And you see it in that God's Not Two movie, God's Not Dead 2. I mean, they go to a court and they ask a judge basically to decide there was a Jesus and then hang on his every word. And that to me is just embodies what's wrong with our approach, that we're waiting on them to make these decisions for us instead of trying to think of creative ways to just solve it. Because guess what? They're not going to fix this. If we think that 51% of people voting a candidate in is going to sway this, and that all of a sudden abortion will go away because we got the right 2 or 3 people appointed, I just think we're fooling ourselves.
If I can add something here, in one of my episodes, so I've been going through each candidate and their position on abortion, and episode 14 is on Donald Trump, and I found a handful of video clips. And so there was one interview that was said with him. The interviewer asked him his stance on abortion. He said that women have the right to abortion in case of rape, incest, and the life of the mother. And then when he was asked if a woman can have an abortion, if those situations don't apply. He said it depends when. And then in an interview, another different interview, he was asked what he would do to change the laws on abortion. And he said that the way that the abortion laws are now is that they are what they are, and I'm not planning on changing anything. So for the pro-lifers to look to Donald Trump to be a pro-life leader in any sense, I think you're delusional at this point.
Yeah, I mean, and Matt said it well. I mean, I think the Republican Party has proven that even the most personally pro-life candidates who have won have demonstrated their inability to do anything on this front. And not only an inability and an unwillingness, you know, and it's – I think Matt had a good point there too, that one person, two people on a you know, court seat, they're not – it's not – it's going to take more than that to do anything in this battlefield. I do think it's interesting that people don't realize that during the Republican debates, Donald Trump was one of the few guys who was like, yeah, Planned Parenthood does some awesome stuff, so I wouldn't defund it. And it's like we forget that. And I think, for the most part, he doesn't know really what he's saying. I think he's just trying to get elected. But I think a lot of times he's always changing his position because he doesn't know what his position is. He just wants to know what he has to say to get elected. And that was one of those situations where I'm like, this guy's in a Republican debate saying that he thinks Planned Parenthood does great things. It's like that was right at the time when we were still on the cusp of just the worst things we've ever seen coming out of Planned Parenthood. Now, there's one other issue I want to touch on here, very important to Christians when they're going to the polls. And I think it's important both from a libertarian perspective and a Christian perspective. Gary Johnson has a very interesting position on gay marriage and where he would go with that. And, you know, when I look at on this particular issue, I lean libertarian on this, and I know a lot of people, especially Christians, don't know how this works from a libertarian perspective and a Christian perspective. I was hoping you guys could kind of talk about how the government's role works in a libertarian ideal with the Christian viewpoint. And so, Matt, I'm going to come to you first on this one. Talk a little bit about Gary Johnson's position. I'm sure you're aware of it. And if you're aware of it, how non-libertarian it is.
It's enormously non-libertarian. Earlier, I made the remark that Johnson views libertarianism as halfway between conservatism and liberalism. You take the most electable parts of both, cram them into one incoherent, unprincipled platform, and then hope that you'll draw people. But the thing is, libertarianism is principled by definition. The things that I advocate for other people being allowed to do are all things I don't want to do and get no benefit from. So, for example, I'm in favor of free and open contracts. If you want to voluntarily associate with another person and make a contract with them, that is 0% my business unless that contract happens to be like a hit. If there's no victim, your contract must be allowed. And anything to the contrary is an aggression against two parties who just simply want to make a contract. It doesn't matter how much I don't like the contract. It doesn't matter how much the contract doesn't benefit the church or Christianity or my preferences or anything. You have the freedom to voluntarily associate with another person as long as you're not doing tangible harm to anybody else. So when Gary Johnson says, oh, Christians, just bake the cake, I'd make them bake the cake. Well, I'm completely in agreement. Come on, Christians, bake the stupid cake. You're not hurting anybody. It's a chance to interact with the world and advocate for the thing that could actually change the world, which is the gospel, not politics. The difference between me and Gary Johnson is I'm not willing to use violence and the force of government to make anybody bake cakes for anybody on any side. So my what's so unprincipled about Johnson in my mind is that I feel like he just licked his finger and put it in the air and said, more people seem to like the idea of making businesses do business and and forcing contracts to be the way we want them to be as a society. And so I guess that's what I think now, and that will be my libertarian position. But the libertarian position is to say even contracts you find abhorrent have to be allowed, and even a rejection of a contract you find abhorrent has to be allowed. And that scares people and freaks them out. But if we really believe in the marketplace of ideas, bad, awful, discriminatory ideas will just fail. If we're so sure it's wrong to be awful to someone else and not do business with them, why don't we just let people try doing it and see how fast that awful, wrong idea fails?
Absolutely. And Elijah, why don't you kind of piggyback off that too, and what are your thoughts on Johnson's position there?
Well, I'm in complete agreement, and I think it's interesting because when I used to describe libertarianism to certain people, it would be what Gary Johnson currently describes as socially liberal and fiscally conservative. But I think that's actually wrongheaded, and Gary Johnson is the ideal person to point out the difference between real libertarianism and what is called socially liberal and fiscally conservative, because a libertarian would hold liberty as a primary political value. They say that as long as, like was said before, as long as you're not hurting anybody, everything is A-okay. You'll be okay. So just let people live. And so So we have the fiscal conservative, but the fiscal conservative is still okay with some forms of, like, you know, taxes based on my personal interest groups and things like that. And then the socially liberal person will be okay with basically anything as long as whatever you're doing doesn't offend me. And in that case, what I'm going to do is I'm going to use the government to force you to comply. No, because what we're supposed to do as libertarians is what we're promoting is a tolerance throughout all of the social perspectives. Like, you know, if anything is a social issue, we're promoting tolerance. It is not social liberal because we have very different approaches to it. The solutions that we will have as libertarians would basically be, yeah, okay, you know, you live your life. That's cool as long as you don't hurt anybody. But like I was saying, with the liberal, it's very much the you can live your life as long as it doesn't offend me. And in that case, I'm going to use the hammer of government to make your life terrible. And so when it comes to making the distinction between a Gary Johnson libertarian and a principled libertarian, I think just looking at how Gary Johnson picks and chooses which ones that he's going to advocate for and when he's going to use government force to do certain things, I think it's a good way to show how Johnson is different than a principled libertarian.
Yeah, I know from my perspective as a Christian who leans libertarian, for me, I think it speaks to what Matt was talking about, this whole idea of government control. And I think it's true that Christians are voting a lot of times to get that control so they can force a moral ideal on the world, not realizing that the government can't accomplish that. For me, removing the government from that role allows freedom for Christ to do what he's going to do. Now, he's going to do what he's going to do regardless of the government system. But when evangelicals are trusting and relying on the government to make homosexuals do what they want them to, or make women do what they want them to do in the case of abortion, we're actually trusting and leaning on the wrong thing. And when we do that in mass as a nation, it's not good. And that's where I think I lean libertarian. There's a lot of people who don't like the idea of a libertarian Christian because, oh, people will be smoking weed and homosexuals will be having these contracts. That doesn't bother me if I trust in Christ to accomplish his purpose through the gospel. If I trust the government to accomplish Christ's purpose through the government, then I can see how that would undermine your viewpoint. Scott, you have another question here. We're going to definitely turn our wheels here, but I'll hand it over to you.
You know, as I'm thinking about, and I'm going to get there in just a second, but as I'm thinking about what you guys have been sharing, I feel like we're in the midst of a high school debate on who's going to be the class president of the sophomore class. You know, so you've got Bobby, who's really popular and runs track, and you've got Sarah over on the other end, who's really a studious bookworm, and she wants the best. So their campaign trail lends itself to talking about, I'm going to get new pizza, you know, at every break for all of the kids. And then you've got the gal saying, oh, no, that's not good. We should have more recess time. I feel like when I was watching the debate there last week or 2 weeks ago, whenever that one was, that I was back in high school watching two little kids spar about things that are just ridiculous. And Donald was like, nope, never said that. And Hillary continued to go on. You know, is there anybody that has a moral compass that really makes sense? And I think that's what bothers me the most. We've got two of the mainstream, you've got Republican and Democrats going at it with two little kids playing games with a country of people that's been led and has a rich history and tradition that's just falling apart. Am I the only one who feels like this? Matt, Elijah, do you guys sense this when you watch a debate? Don't you want more?
Well, we're not talking about anything anymore. The conversation we've just had is more substantive in terms of principles and philosophy of governing than the entire summation of everything that was said during the primaries and the presidential and vice presidential debate. It's not issues oriented because the two sides don't care about issues. It's right. irrelevant. People on the right think that the problem is government. People on the left think that the problem is business. What neither side gets is that neither government nor business can victimize you unless they're in it together. So you just got this really simple game that's being played here that's exposed by the fact that no actual policy gets discussed. You need the right to keep advocating and keeping the tension on one end of the rope. You need the left to keep the tension on the other end of the rope. And who wins? Well, the left and the right win. Who doesn't win?
Right.
Decency, integrity, planet Earth,
America.
Humans. Yeah, all of those things. So they have, they have no impetus. It doesn't benefit them to talk about issues.
Speaking of the, what did you say, like high school? I actually think that it's less than high, it's lower than high school, probably elementary school, especially if you look at the typical responses from like Hillary Clinton to Donald Trump about whatever. Like, okay, so I've seen these, you know, the memes and all the conversations that I've had on Facebook and stuff, and I saw one that had, what was it? Donald Trump, you need to file your tax or show your taxes, and then he says, I emailed them to you. Ha ha ha.
You're right.
You know what that is? That's I know you are, but what am I? That's I'm rubber, you are glue. Whatever you say bounces off of me and sticks to you. This is pathetic. And the fact that this passes for political discourse is something that's I don't want to live on this planet anymore. It's so stupid.
Yeah. You know, the Proverbs tell us about a fool and their folly, and here we are in the midst of it. But I want to talk about something that I think gets completely overlooked because we live in the year 2016 and everybody's equal. And that is the topic in regards to women in leadership. And I'm just about to be called person completely against a women's movement here after I throw this out there, but what does the Bible say in regards to a woman in leadership? And this is a tricky stance to dive into, and I kind of took this stance back when Sarah Palin was doing her thing 4 years ago, and you know, she's still in the background. I keep waiting for her to reemerge, but now we've got Hillary running for president. When I look in scripture, God didn't even want man to be a king. He was king. Yet, of course, the people, you know, clamored and yelled and did all kinds of things to Samuel and in 1 Samuel. And he said, okay, I'm going to make man a king. And he gave the world Saul. What stance should a believer take in regards to a woman being a president? Should that be allowed in regards to what God says? Thoughts on this topic? Matt, what do you think?
I have no objection whatsoever. I think there's I think it's a trickier passage than people often look at. I've never been a part of a church with a woman pastor or leader. Maybe that's just how it's worked out. I don't know. Maybe it's a secret reflection of my mentality. I couldn't say. But honestly, until I saw you were going to ask the question, it never had even occurred to me. I certainly don't think we can apply that reasoning outside the boundaries of a voluntary, insular organization like a church. We're part of a pluralistic society. It's a larger society. Other people's reads on gender roles count. And so it just wouldn't cross my mind.
But should it?
Maybe. I'm not going to argue that it shouldn't, but no, I don't read the passages that are pertinent as being relative to a democratic election involving public office.
Well, I think it's probably generally speaking where I fall, because even if you were to take a hardcore complementarian perspective and that like women cannot be pastors and all this other good stuff, I can understand where like the issues that would fall with that. Like if there was a woman that was a pastor and that, you know, she's supposed to be under the husband at home, and how does that dynamic end up working out with a woman pastor who's married, and is the husband actually the pastor of the church by proxy? I can understand all that kind of goofy kind of where do we fall on that sort of thing. But I think I fall with Matt on this one, is that because this is, we're not talking specifically about a church, we're talking about a democratic election of a non-theocracy essentially, I don't really see that as being too much of an issue. There might be some kind of funniness going on with certain things if she goes from being like let's say she is a president and she is the president and she's a member of a church, and how that might work out, that would be kind of interesting. But again, she's holding a public office in politics, and I think even in certain roles, like she'll be the boss in some cases, and she will also be the not boss in other cases. Even if she was a president, even outside of the church, like let's say she went to a gym and wanted to get start working out, she will be underneath somebody like her trainer. Her trainer will be her boss.
Yes.
And I don't think the fact that she's the president makes any difference in that situation. And so if she was a president and were in at church, I don't think it would make too much of a difference there either. So I think I largely fall with where Matt is on this one.
You know, I think it's funny, though. Most people would not even consider talking about anything other than, you know, the popular things of the day and where does he or she stand on a specific viewpoint. I don't think people think when it comes to this topic. You've got one person saying, well, I like Trump because Trump's in your face and he's going to say it like he thinks, whether that's good or bad. And then you've got other people supporting Hillary for the options that they like, this Democratic sea and no taxes and things of that nature, but really don't know any of the specific stances where these people are. And I think, as was already stated, I don't think these people really know where they are. It's a popularity contest that drives me batty, because in one of the largest, most influential countries in the world, we've got a sophomoric campaign going on, and it's scary. It's scary for our kids. And you know what? Whether you have a specific stance or don't on a woman being president, we should at least be able to back up our knowledge of what is going on and be able to think through the process if we're going to vote for one, the other, or a third-party candidate. I think most people just go by the popularity trend. Oh, I heard so-and-so say they're not going to raise taxes, so that's who I'm going to vote for. And I think it's scary. Jeremy, I hand it back over to you to continue to follow up on this line of questioning.
Yeah, you know, I think my biggest concern with evangelicals, with Christians, I even hate to use the term evangelicals anymore, because what passes for evangelical in the public right now is just sad. But it's still what the political realm would see as the evangelical vote. I'm concerned that, you know, Scott, you bring up a great issue with the should a woman be president. There's a lot of people out there who are like, yeah, just because Hillary's a woman, I'm not voting for her. That's a terrible reason not to vote for someone. I mean, I get that if that's your principle and that's one issue, great. But I think that's the easy out that a lot of evangelicals go with. And that sort of goes to what I'm going to bring up next. And, you know, whether it's the abortion issue, which is an important issue, or the gay marriage issue, or whether or not a woman should be president or in leadership, I think Christians are always looking for an easy way to place their vote. And they're always looking for one little check mark to justify them not voting for somebody. And this is sort of a double-ended question here, because it's something I've been thinking about too. When I look at, you know, Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, and Gary Johnson, who are the major candidates, I think I may have the opportunity to vote for Daryl Castle just in mere principle. I'm not sure if they're going to get qualified in our state or not. But I want to ask both you, Elijah and Matt, what your thoughts are on a Christian voting for somebody who is, first of all, immoral, but not just, I guess we can't put degrees on it, but to the level that we're at this point, looking at a Trump, looking at a Clinton, can they vote for them and still be keeping their conscience clear? And along with that, is a no vote a viable option, or is that like a dereliction of duty? Do we have to vote as an American citizen? Or I was thinking about Dietrich Bonhoeffer's quote, which isn't meant to be used the way I'm going to use it, but he said, not to speak is to speak, and not to act is to act. Can somebody who is a thought-through Christian political, looked at all the issues, make a no vote? And is that somehow, we talked about this earlier in the show, a vote for Hillary, or you don't get to argue about anything for the next 4 years? What are your thoughts on those two things? Can a Christian morally, with a clear conscience, vote for somebody like this? And if they don't vote, are they somehow making the wrong choice in terms of conscience as well? Elijah, I'll start with you, and then Matt, you can follow up.
All right. So in terms of the should or if we don't vote, I think my perspective on it is that if you feel informed enough to make an informed vote, please vote. But if you don't feel informed enough to vote, please don't vote. I know that's relying on people to be self-reflective, and that's probably not a very good way to do it, but because people tend to not be very self-critical. But I think if we had a culture where if you approach the polls in a way that says, do I know enough about this to vote? I think if you can be critical with yourself enough to say, no, I don't, then I think you shouldn't vote on that issue. As an example, I was voting in a recent local election, and I voted for the things that I understood and things that. Then there was one proposal that was like a bill or something, and I read it, and I'm like, I have no clue what this is, so I just left it blank. I didn't vote yes, I didn't vote no, I just cast my ballot without filling in anything. So my vote was not counted on that, but it was counted on the local representatives and stuff like that that I was voting for. And as far as it goes, okay, so within the libertarian community, there's a segment of people that are anarchists, or the anarcho-capitalists, and they would basically say that even the act of voting is giving consent to – how do they word it? They're giving consent to being governed, and being governed is an act of aggression. So they say that they should not, that no one should vote because it's giving consent to being aggressed against. Now, I don't go that far. I say that if we have the ability to change anything, and I think voting, we do have at least a minimal ability to express our voice in something. I think that we should do it. Again, assuming that we've actually studied the issue to a point where we're comfortable with voting for it. And as far as it goes to voting for somebody immoral, obviously, we're never going to be voting for anybody who is perfect, because I don't think we're going to get a chance to vote for Jesus. But if we did, I would hope it would be 100% consensus, Jesus gets my vote. But when it comes to certain people and their morality, I lean virtue ethics. Like that's my approach to ethical considerations in general, is that you have to look at the kind of person that a person is. And from who they are as a person, you'll know kind of what they'll decide. And from what they've decided, you can kind of tell what kind of person that they are. And I think, in general, politicians are low on that spectrum, just in general, because that's kind of the culture that we've created, is that we have people who our society is essentially built on politicians who are corrupt, and private sector people who use the corrupt politicians to corrupt themselves. And so I think the fact that the government is so large, it has its fingers in so many different things, essentially makes it so that we are guaranteed to vote for somebody immoral. I think it is our duty as voters to vote against the gigantic government system, and in so doing, we can reduce the amount of corruption and then subsequently make it so that there are more and more, or I guess less and less, fewer and fewer blatantly immoral people to vote for by voting against the system itself, by getting rid of government influence, by getting rid of the corruption. We can start moving towards a position where we can actually feel as though we might be voting for somebody morally virtuous.
Matt, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree that, yeah, there's a smokescreen that's getting used right now when it comes to the question of voting for someone moral or not moral. And it's this, well, now everybody's imperfect, so we just need to – well, wait a minute now. There are different kinds of imperfect. And this is the one I was really pushing back in that video that I posted today. That I don't know. We can talk about that some other time, I suppose.
Oh, it's hilarious.
But, I mean, what kind of immoral are we talking about? Are we talking about the kind of immoral – where a dude is really respectful of other people but is addicted to porn? I can live with that. I'll vote with it. That's fine. I don't need to know that. I don't care. It's irrelevant. If that person is my friend and he wants to ask me what I think about porn, okay, then we'll have a conversation. That, in my mind, does not directly affect that person's ability to govern. Is the way the person is immoral that he just loves meth and he wants the nuclear codes, but he can't get enough meth? Well, that's different then. Because that feels like it would have more of an effect on your judgment over things like harnessing the power of the sun to melt the flesh of our enemies. And I don't really want meth factoring into your decision-making on that.
But what kind of immoral do we mean? Are you greedy? Do you cheat people all the time? Do you scam people? Do you consistently lie? Do you do backdoor deals to take advantage of other people? Are you willing to take out wink, wink, nod, nod hits to kill or eliminate people who are problematic to you, but not have to own that? See, that kind of immoral is worse to me than I like beer. And so I feel like there's this silly smokescreen, like, well, you know what? Good old Honest Abe, as honest as he was immoral too. And he was a pretty good president. So I think these two would work out. What? that kind of common sense. We would never lack that kind of common sense in deciding who we want to babysit our kids or who we want to give trust to in our lives or who we want to put in charge of our organization. Neither of these two candidates would be considered for any leadership position in any of our churches, in any of our social clubs. We wouldn't trust them. Yet for some reason, because we get this lesser of two evils, everyone's imperfect smokescreen nonsense, we're being cajoled into voting for one of these two horrible options. Which leads me to your second question. You know, is voting third party a vote for Hillary or a vote effectively for Trump? No. The only vote for Hillary is if you check the box next to Hillary Clinton's name. That's a vote for Hillary. The only vote for Trump. Likewise, we are free, autonomous people. We can do what we want. We can consent to be governed. And right now, I'm not feeling in the mood to consent to be governed by either of these two major parties. I don't know what I'm going to do about that, because almost surely they're going to win again, and I'm going to have to wrestle with that here in 6 weeks or whatever it is, so it's getting closer now. But no, my refusal to continue to, you know, to eat at that trough is not an effective vote for one or the other. I am rejecting politics. I'm not an anarchist, but I do think that people forget that every law has an or else at the end. Every law is ultimately enforced with violence. And unless you're really, really sure you want to do those things to other people, you shouldn't be voting for it. And I'm very sure I do not want to do the things that either party is advocating for to other people. So I'm not going to vote for it. And I'm going to try to have a clean conscience that I fought against it. I didn't want that to happen to you, my neighbor. I'm sorry.
I got it. I've got it. I just thought of the solution to the problem, gentlemen. All we need to do is create a 30-minute test. It's a 30-minute test. Before you can vote, you have to take this 30-minute test. Nobody's going to do that. The popularity test is over. Nobody's going to vote for stupid because they have taken the test and they've passed. I think that's it. But, of course, that won't happen either because of the, you know, the roller coaster ride we're on. But to follow up with one more question for you guys, and then I'm going to let Jeremy wrap things up. Four years from now, we may be doing another interview with another popularity contest being run, and I don't know who that winner is going to be this year of the election. What kind of changes do you think are going to happen? Are we going to be in the same place we are today, talking about the same things? And what can change that thought process? Is there a way to change that thought process? Matt, I start with you.
I think grace is the answer to all of this stuff. And grace doesn't just mean now you don't have to face judgment from God because of Jesus. I mean extending that same patience and forbearance to people we disagree with. Grace with people we think just like, that's easy. Grace with people who live near us but live different and look different and sound different, that's hard. But we are so polarized, and the division between majority and minority is so narrow that now is the time for us to just realize we have to cut other people slack. We got to wish them well and root for them, even as they do things we don't like, and hope they'll return the favor, even ask for them to return the favor. Now, there's one group that it makes sense for this to start with, and it's us. And I hope that this election finally puts a bullet in the head of this religious, controlling, political monster we made 40 or 50 years ago. And I hope that what is born in its place is a church that is eager to extend grace even to people it loudly disagrees with. A church that wants grace and patience and peace, not just for people like us, but for everybody. And a church that understands that when we make an environment that is conducive to the gospel can thrive. But one where the political stakes are as high and as controlling as we've made them, it thwarts the gospel and it undercuts our attempt to communicate the grace of Christ. I hope we're talking about a reality where we're that kind of church in 4 years.
Amen. Amen. Elijah, thoughts?
Yeah, I would love to see that come to be the case. I don't know exactly what will happen because I don't have the gift of prophecy, but I can hope that what is currently happening to the GOP will happen to the Democrat Party at some point soon. Because Trump and the Trump, what do you call them? Trump supporters. they seem to have split the Republican Party into two. On one hand, we have the nationalists and the populists. And on the other hand, you have people who are more Tea Party, more conservative, more libertarian. And if this continues the way that I think it might, I think we might have a almost totally non-viable Republican Party. And if I don't want to say that this is definitely going to happen because, you know, I don't want to have to eat my shoe, but it seems like it's heading in the direction of having a non-viable Republican Party that is replaced by two, what would otherwise be moderately viable, what would seem to be third party, a populist nationalist one and a libertarian conservative one. And I would love for those two parties to emerge out of this so that the libertarian conservative one can beat the crap out of the populist one. But I don't know what will happen. I would hope that with the way that the whole Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton thing went down, I would hope that the Democrats are not satisfied with Hillary Clinton as president. If she becomes a president, I hope that they are not satisfied and they want to move further. And so what can happen then is then if we move in that direction, we could have a socialist party, which I think would be hilarious because then the conservative libertarians could beat those ones up too. And so if we ended up having parties with real ideological differences, that's all I really want is I want real ideological differences. I'm sick of this one party, but we're pretending to be two parties. I want a debate between like a Bernie Sanders and a Ron Paul. I want that to be the presidential debate. I want that to be even remotely close to what we are, what we're seeing. But all we're seeing right now is the Democrat disguised as Donald Trump and the Republican disguised as Hillary Clinton, and they're pretending to disagree with each other. And I know you are, but what am I? And then the media goes crazy. This is a mess. So I'm hoping that things will change and there will be real ideological differences and that we can actually vet these differences between the candidates. And like Matt said, then we'll have an actually legitimately tolerant Christian church that is involved and actually promotes this idea of Christ's love and stuff. And it would be great. The future, as of right now, I think it might be cool. But for the moment, we're going to have to duck our heads down and wait for this one to blow over.
Well, I appreciate you guys coming on the show. I'm going to give you a chance to share your particular views. But before I do that, I just, you know, hearing you describe that, Elijah, I heard Matt say, sign me up. Yes, definitely. And I think you're right. I think what we're – if some good is coming out of this complete nonsense, I think more than ever than I've seen anyway in the last, I'd say, 15, 20 years, I see a public that's looking at this and going, something's wrong here. I mean, when you have people participating in the process and then we get to this point and they go, how is this person the candidate? I mean, we had eight debates for the primary portion of this for the Republicans, 16 different candidates. People are paying a little bit more attention to what goes on in their state and what happens at the local level and how does a guy like Barack Obama get to be president? What are the steps that get him there? And I think Americans on the whole are starting to go, is this really how it works? And I think that's a good thing for them to ask. And then hopefully we start to figure out how this whole party system works. Seems like the libertarians at least have starting to figure out how that thing plays out. And hopefully, rather than keep playing this facade of the party, the actual meaningful differences begin to emerge in particular parties that make sense, rather than people just going, well, I don't agree with anybody in this party, but I must vote for this person because that's the party I'm in. I mean, hopefully we can get beyond that and get just, you know, there's a Republican or there's a debate tonight between Trump and Hillary. And I don't know that I will watch it. I mean, I probably will, but it's like watching a train wreck happen. So I'm a little concerned about where we're headed. I don't think Scott had in our notes. I don't think Rome's going to burn, but we're getting pretty close. Scott, do you have any final thoughts before we go ahead and close this up?
No, I think we've hammered it out pretty heavy. I don't think right now we've got a clear-cut person that can adequately lead this country. So what's that mean? Well, that means people who love Jesus Christ and want to impart that and serve others with that thought process, you know what? Now's our time to shine. No matter who this president's going to be, we need to do our best to be the people God wants us to be through the gifts that he gives us. And I just keep praying that someday the Lord brings that person to the front of the pack here to lead in a unique way that we can show love to our neighbors all over this globe. Because right now, it's like Elijah said, it's a mess. And it's disgusting, and it's hard to watch, and it's hard to take in. And I don't know who I'm voting for yet either, guys. It's not going to be the top two, but I haven't decided which third party. You know, a vote for Scott McCauley is a vote that makes sense. I just don't have the money to, you know, win that popularity contest. So, you know, we stand by and see what happens, Jeremy.
A vote for nobody is a vote for Scott McCauley. I like that logic.
There you go.
So Matt, why don't we, as we close out here, why don't you guys share about your various endeavors? You guys are both involved quite a bit online with media. Matt, go ahead and share, folks, where they can find you and follow up with you. You got a great YouTube channel.
Yeah, I've got a YouTube channel called Worst Christian Ever. I host a show on there called the 10-Minute Bible Hour, where I try to sanely and patiently work my way through books of the Bible. I am right now going through Ephesians, Acts, and Luke. Additionally, I talk about whatever I feel like talking about on that channel. So I don't know. The thesis of the channel is it's all one thing: politics, culture, movies, entertainment, social stuff, Bible, the Jesus thing, the faith thing. It's all one thing. It's not a bunch of compartments. So I insist on stubbornly continuing to post a bunch of videos about a bunch of different stuff. So I've got that cooking, and that's available as a podcast as well. And then I have some other things that are coming down the pike, but I'll have to wait till next time to tell you about that.
Cool deal. Elijah, tell folks about your podcast.
Yeah, I'm the host of it's called The Fetal Position. You can find that at thefetalposition.com. It's a bioethics podcast dedicated to having open and honest discussions about abortion and other related topics from there. From a pro-life perspective, the goal is to promote quality of all human beings, not because of what they can do, but because of who they are. And I think human life and human rights ought to be respected and defended from womb to tomb. And my basic idea with the podcast is that I want to come at bioethics from a respecting human life because of who we are. And we're all made in the image of God. And I want to explore the topic of abortion primarily, but then every five or so episodes, I have something different. For the last time I talked about vaccines and using aborted fetal tissue in the vaccines and stuff. And then I also talked about whether or not we should be able to genetically engineer our children and a whole bunch of other issues, all related in that general category. But the key is that I do not, at least I hope, one of my top goals is that I do not ignore the fact that we are all human and that we are all equal and that our rights our right to life and our dignity should be respected.
Amen. And I appreciate both of your guys' works. Thanks for being on the show. This concludes this episode of Theology Mixer Radio. Folks, vote your conscience as you go to the polls in a month here. Thanks again. If you are